listening to a download from theoutdoorstation.co.uk. Number 538.
Hello and welcome back to The Outdoor Station. I'm your host, Bob Cartwright, and over the last 16 years, these podcasts have touched on many aspects of the outdoors and self-powered travel. Sometimes I interview other travellers and hikers. There's also a mix of audio diaries, talks with brands, authors. It's basically a huge reservoir of outdoor knowledge and love, all contained within the library of 537 podcasts, just sitting there waiting for you to call upon them and set them free and help you to get through this current lockdown. If you're a long-time listener, you'll know that, where possible, I do like to talk with new and upcoming brands to give them some airtime and help share their message, especially cottage industries and, in particular, those with a sustainable approach. As you'll hear, my guests on this podcast meet this in spades, and so if you're tempted to try any of their products, do stay listening to the very end, as they have created a special discount code for the Outdoor Station listeners, valid in the UK, Europe, and the US. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another live stream here on the Outdoor Station, and something a little bit different tonight. Every week's a little bit different, in fact. Tonight we're talking with a new exciting brand, or a fairly young brand, shall I say, that's all the way coming from international sources. But first, of course, I have to introduce my lovely assistant, otherwise I'd get beaten very severely. And we have Rose, of course, in the chat room. Now, Rose will be looking at any comments that are coming through. You're welcome to join in and mention comments as the conversation ensues, and obviously if you have anything specific to ask of on my guests, do put a capital Q at the beginning of the question so we can make it clearer, and we'll put the big ones or the good ones towards the end, as well as discuss whatever topics come forth.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this tonight, actually. There's some really interesting information coming through, and I do a bit of spinning and weaving myself and dyeing, so I'm really interested.
So there you are. You have it from the spinner in the family. So she's already been asking technical questions in the pre-show. So we'll see how it transcribes. So tonight, who are we speaking to? Well, tonight I've got the pleasure of speaking to Meli and Renzo Hinostroza, who are the brother and sister team behind the young and upcoming brand Arms of Andes, based in Peru. They make highly technical and durable and sustainable apparel using lovely soft alpaca wool, keeping their carbon footprint extremely small, servicing the UK and Europe with the .eu address and the United States and others from the .com. Using locally sourced materials, local suppliers, local skills and other natural sourced dyes and cotton, they're leading the way in Peru with sustainable manufacturing practices. Tonight we're going to be exploring the background to the brand, the technical benefits of alpaca wool, and their ambition to make Arms of Andes one of the most sustainable and eco-friendly brands in the international outdoor market. So welcome to the show, Meli and Renzo.
Hey.
Good evening.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon for you, yes. Now let's just get this right. So Meli, you're in the Netherlands, so you're an hour ahead, so it must be 8 o'clock-ish with you. And what time is it with you, Renzo?
It is 2 p.m.
2 p.m. Okay. So just a brief check, first of all. Obviously, COVID's affected us all, and I understand your factories or your workshop is currently on lockdown at the moment. Are you guys sort of strapped in and limited to what you can do as well, both in the Netherlands and Peru?
It's a bit, we're in curfew right now, so everything's done through a laptop. But I think for Renzo, it's a bit harder because they're on full lockdown, right?
Yeah, so In Peru, we have a curfew at 6 p.m. here in Lima. It's very strict. Everyone has to wear a mask if they're going outside. But you get a pass if you're in certain industries. So textiles is one of them. So we're moving forward completely. Previously, it was a full lockdown, and that was a bit more difficult. There wasn't any supplies at all. But now it's fine. But everyone just has to be home by 6.
Okay. So managing. And have you, in Peru particularly, have you got the vaccine coming through? Yeah. Is it filtering through the system?
I think right now it's only for just essential people. But I did just read an article that they're negotiating to come through. So it's taking a little while, actually. Right. And Peru is a serious situation.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll move on from that subject. But I was just interested to know what limits or what restrictions you had. But first, I really want to start with Melly tonight, if I may. Melly, you know, Arms of Andes is probably a name quite unfamiliar in the UK. It may be getting better known in the European, because obviously we're not part of mm-hmm. Europe anymore, in the European countries. And I know you've only been going for a sort of couple of years, but you're really starting to get going now. So could you just give us a little bit of background about you and your family and your history and the relationship with Peru?
Yeah, of course. So my brother and I were born and raised in Los Angeles, California. Our parents are from Peru, my mother from Cajamarca, and my dad from Huancayo. And we've had great ties with our culture. We've been going to Peru since we were kids, and we also hold citizenship as well. And we've been doing business in Peru for several years now. And we've been working with the alpaca fiber for about 7 years. And basically we looked into the benefits of alpaca wool and the functional side of it. And we kind of fell into the outdoor industry. Also, me and my brother are also backpackers and travelers as well. So we're quite familiar with how it is to pack light and have good clothes that will take you further into your adventures. So we were fortunate to come from a country that has this fiber, and we developed a base layer that turned into a mid layer, but it all came out well. And yeah, basically that's how we started.
And your family, are the majority of your family still obviously in Peru? Because obviously Renzo is in Peru at the moment. Or have you sort of spread out over distant lands?
Yes. So I moved to the Netherlands about 4 years ago. And that was just for studying purposes. And luckily, I was able to open the company in Europe as well. But my brother lives in Peru at the moment, and he handles everything of production there. And as well, we also have most of our family there, too.
And the pictures we're looking at the moment, is that the area that your family sort of herald from?
I believe that's more Cusco area. Region. I wouldn't say there's I think you have a photo of my brother and my mom in front of an abandoned house, kind of. That's where she's from, but this area was more the Cusco region. Yes. So that's the home she was raised in, and her house was built of adobe, so it's more, I guess, traditional, you could say. She was raised, I guess you can say, very Inca style. She made her own clothes. She made her dolls. She dyed everything. So she lived a, I would say, a more sustainable lifestyle. And that really influenced us to really push sustainability and ask these questions of the way she lived. So why would we use natural dyes, and why is it so important?
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, really. I know that your parents, or your father in particular, you mentioned in some of your text on the website, influenced you quite heavily to think about producing a sustainable product and using a very small carbon footprint in the process. So what was his influence, and how did he obviously pass that on to you?
Oh, so my dad actually... So he's been doing business in Peru since I was a kid. And since I was a kid, he would tell us always, the benefits of owning your own business, but also to go in further and and you know that there's struggles to keep pushing, to basically keep innovating, keep thinking what you can do in Peru, because there's so much that Peru has to offer. And so since we were kids, we were able to do that. We were able to see him work, and you know the downfalls of working in Peru, the way the business is, and then the good things about it. And so about like 19 years old, I started working with him, and it was very tough. But me and my brother both got to understand how to do the business right and how to grow the company. So when we started, it was very difficult, but knowing how to do business in Peru, we were able to make something very great. And being a manufacturer also allowed us to also push that sustainable part, which we'll go into more details, of course, and explain what we did.
Excellent. Yeah. Now, you said you did some traveling yourself, and obviously you've had different experiences in the outdoors. So what education, what not education, it's not the right word. What experiences did you have that made you start to think about alpaca as being a different type of yarn, a different type of material? Before we get into the deep technicalities, just the general feel of it, how did you suddenly think, hang on a second, whatever it is you're wearing is not quite as good as whatever it was that you had in mind, or some other alpaca-based product?
Being backpackers, you know, and being hikers, we saw the struggles, you know, the stuff like you want low moisture clothes, you want it to be beneficial. You want clothes that are able to take you further, that don't smell and so forth. But when we learned about merino wool, and then we learned about the benefits of alpaca wool, we kind of thought, not merino wool is great, but we always thought maybe alpaca is better because of where the alpaca is raised. So it was kind of like both came hand in hand. They both met. It wasn't really that we wanted to start an outdoor brand. It's that we found the benefits of the alpaca wool, and that kind of, and then having experiences of a travel that pushed us to open this outdoor brand.
Well, in actual fact, we have a comment from Martha, who's watching us from Canada. And she says, Martha here from Canada, been looking at alpaca fiber for the next base mid-layer purchase. This is good timing. So that's one thing. The other thing, comments that's just popped up is from Chris Williams. And he says he likes the name Arms of Andes. Now, where did the name come from?
Yes. So actually, so we have an oldest brother called Alex. And then there's Renzo. And I have a little sister. Well, we have a little sister called Mia. And then our parents are from the Andes. So it's basically our names and children from the Andes.
Let's come over to Renzo now. And obviously, he's at the dirty end, getting his hands dirty and producing all these glorious.
Very dirty.
So I've got a lovely video here of some shearing that's taking place. So, do you want to sort of introduce alpaca to people that perhaps haven't quite grasped what where it fits in the wool range of animals like llamas and so on? Because obviously, there is a difference between these animals. So. And there's something special about alpaca I know you want to mention. So would you like to comment on it while I'm running the video?
Okay, yeah, of course. Alpacas come from a wild animal called vicuña, and the vicuña were selectively bred by older civilizations, older than the Incas themselves, for their fiber. So for thousands of years, so more than 0 BC, before that, alpacas were being bred in the mountains by these small rural communities. So what you're seeing right now is actually a small community. And throughout all of the, there's these tiny little communities that have one alpaca, two alpaca, 10 alpaca, 20 alpaca. And they do this, and they've been doing this for thousands of years with alpaca. Now, because alpaca come in this environment, the Andes, thousands of meters up in the mountains where the environment goes from very cold, very hot in the same day, the fiber is actually adapted for extreme weather conditions, much like merino wool. And this is where all wools have an advantage over other clothes, is that they're actually clothes. The alpaca fiber is the clothes of the alpaca. And the environment the alpaca comes from is a very difficult outdoor environment. In fact, of the fibers, I would say it's the most difficult environment. Now, alpaca has the advantage that it was selectively bred for thousands of years, so there's enough of it to actually make clothes out of, whereas some other fibers, you don't have enough to actually make a full production item. You have this with merino and you have this with alpaca. So these two items really stand out, and then alpaca really stands out because it was such a longer time at a higher elevation with harsher temperatures. So this is what makes the alpaca fiber really stand out. And then on top of that, a very rich cultural history with the people, natural dyeing, hand selecting the fleece. There's a lot of culture behind these fibers as well.
And from the video clip we saw there, I've never seen an animal look so chilled out being sheared, if nothing else. Are they all as relaxed as that?
Yes. No. No, some yes, some no, but they have been doing this for a while. It's nice to see. It's not a big... In fact, you have to shear them. So it's not even an option. If you don't shear them, they'll grow bacteria and it'll get too heavy. So they've been selectively bred for this. They're not like the wild vicuña, where that's not an issue. They're already wild animals. They don't have to be sheared. But the alpacas have to be sheared. So in some level, they are used to it. And in some level, they can be nervous. Sometimes they throw up. That's more common, but it's nothing abusive at all.
Well, they certainly look very relaxed during that clip. Now, I've got some more pictures to show here, a slideshow of the production process, or as best I can grasp from the material that you sent me. So do you want to just sort of talk us through the method, the process? Because I know the emphasis is definitely on the fact that your source material isn't very, very far away from your production house. Everything is kept with a very minimal footprint from a carbon point of view, and obviously you're using local skills throughout. So talk us through the pictures that we're going to see on screen.
Okay, perfect. So this is me holding the alpaca fiber. So at Arms of Andes, we're a brand manufacturer, so we manufacture. And fortunately with alpacas, we can do it all in Peru. So this gives us a huge advantage of transparency and also control over the production, because we speak the language. At any moment, we can fly over to Cusco, Arequipa, or wherever, and see. So this image we're seeing is some of the technical benefits. It's a comparison between alpaca fibers and the other fibers. Used in outdoors would be the polyester and the merino wool as well. So to begin the production, the animal has its fleece. The alpacas, they have their fleece, and in the previous video, you could see that they were sheared. This fleece happens throughout all the Andes Mountains, and it's taken and collected into a warehouse where then it's hand-selected. So that process, there's no chemicals or anything at all. After the fleece has been selected, it's slowly transformed into yarn, and the yarn we work with uses 2GOTS certified, so organic certified non-damage for the environment chemicals. And then basically throughout the rest of the process, there's no chemical. So after it's made into the yarn, it's woven into fabric, and then it's cut into the pieces to make the clothes. And the people involved are usually in the beginning process when they're selecting the yarn, as the photo shows, or the fiber. And then when you put the clothes together at the very end of the process, when you're sewing everything together, there's people involved. And so it's very easy to identify who's working on what and to check that everything's done in quality control and ethically as well. So this is the final stage where you have all the pieces cut. And this is me acting like I know what I'm doing. But essentially, this is where... I know a little bit. So this is some of the cutting. And then after this, shortly, we sew it all together. And one line we have is our all-natural, natural colors line, where we work with 100% biodegradable material, meaning the fabric is, of course, 100% alpaca, as with all our clothes, but also the thread is cotton, and our labels are cotton as well, too. So our shirts in that line are 100% biodegradable, all of it made in Peru, so there's a very low carbon footprint. And as I mentioned in the production process, very minimal chemicals used, and they are all GOTS certified as well. And so the advantage, again, of working with alpaca is that whole line from the fiber collection to making the yarn and then to making the final clothes, it's all done here in Peru, where we can always check. We're just a short flight away if we have to go into the mountains to check, but everything's really easy to trace. And this is the natural dyeing. So this is the natural red in this photo. It's cochineal. And then we also have indigo. So these clothes in our natural line, in our natural dyed line, they're dyed without any chemical. So it's cochineal for red, indigo for blue, and eucalyptus for gray. Yeah, so, and that's the end of the product. So this video shows a little bit of how the cochineal dyeing is done. And this is also, cochineal comes from Peru. So this is what I was mentioning earlier about the cultural process, is that it is all literally done in Peru. You have the fiber, you have the textile workers, and also the dyers are in Peru. And it's crazy to be able to have such high quality materials all in one place.
And how many people have you got in the team, in the studio or in the factory or whatever you refer to it as?
So in the factory, depends on the level of production we're doing, but it's 5 to 10 people. Right now there is a limitation of 3 people working in the studio at a time because of the quarantine. But it's usually around that amount in the production team. And there's different parts along the production line.
I read somewhere that the amount of moisture that alpaca would absorb in if it got soaked was 10% or less, which obviously is one of the reasons why it's such a good technical fabric. But if we could just get into details for a second, for people who obviously will have heard of Merino, we're very familiar with Merino here and certainly the name Merino. What is the difference between alpaca and Merino? Is there a specific difference or something that's noticeable?
Yeah, so Merino is a great fiber, and we often say how great it's doing, and we're appreciative of what it's done because it allows us to promote alpaca wool as well. But so Merino has a slightly higher moisture retention, and that's to the weight of the fiber. Eventually, if you leave these fibers in water, they will all soak up always. It's that both Merino and to a higher degree alpaca on the surface will not be absorbing moisture. And that's the benefit you want, because you want to feel dry on the surface. And then inside it will absorb the moisture and help you wick it away. So one of the advantages is that alpaca has smoother scales. And that's a pretty big advantage in the feel of it, but also to have a stable yarn and a more resistant yarn. This is a great advantage. The smoother scales, as well as the low water moisture retention. And then also at certain microns, they have microscopic holes in them. As if you can see in the little photo, there's a little a cross section of a bunch of fibers together, and you can see these hollow, semi-hollow core pockets in them, and that helps as well with thermal properties. So these are some of the advantages that alpaca has.
Okay, now the appeal has obviously grown slowly as your marketing and I guess your name has started to spread through the different areas. So where have you been promoting your brand so far and what's the response been?
Yeah, so our main market was originally the US, and then Melissa helped expand into Europe as well, and the UK. Of course, because of the many different languages, it takes a little longer. But so far, the U.S. and the U.K., and we're really trying to get into China, if my brother would join. He speaks Mandarin. But so, yeah, we are expanding into, our next steps would be Australia, Japan. And we have some orders from, like, the Middle East as well, which is pretty interesting. But we love to be everywhere. The main markets are the U.S., U.K., Europe, and we're slowly looking into Asia as well.
And how are you finding it, Melly, over in mainland Europe? It's very hard to say that these days, just the fact that we've obviously disconnected ourselves. But I've got to keep referring to Europe as a separate country. So mainland Europe, how are they taking to the products?
They're actually liking it a lot, especially in Scandinavia areas, because they're way more familiar with wool than any other of the countries out there. But I think, to add on a bit about what Brenzo was talking about the manufacturing process and everything, it's us being there, being the brand and also the producer of our own clothes, we can we're able to do these things. We're able to add in the natural dyes. We were able to add in the biodegradable labels, and we were able to be so transparent with our company just because we were there. So we were very fortunate. If I was to do that work from the Netherlands, that would have never happened. There was no way I could make a company and do all the production from Amsterdam. We wouldn't reach the quality we were able to reach now.
And that is the important thing to remember, isn't it? Because you are keeping the connections fairly short between each process. Your source material isn't traveling thousands of miles to be graded and then going 100 miles somewhere else to be turned into yarn, et cetera, et cetera. You're keeping things really down very, very tight indeed. And as you say, I can understand it actually in Europe and in the UK as well. If you were trying to produce some products from source material, it'd actually be quite a complicated process. So perhaps, obviously, Peru has got a few advantages as well as a few hard ones to work with. So who's the fitness guru in your group of friends? That it's obviously very athletic.
That's Lacey. That's Serban Lacey. That's one of our friends. We did a little trip in Cusco. She's wearing the natural indigo leggings and the eucalyptus long sleeve shirt, and she joined us on a trip in Cusco. She was in the Sacred Valley, and she was very nice enough to let us take some pics of her in this hot day. So we're very grateful to Lacey.
Perform for you. So natural dyes then, I mean, I must say, folks, if you're watching this and obviously you're engrossed in the conversation, which is great, if you've got any comments or any questions you want to put to Melly and Renzo, then please drop them in the chat. They both chat seem to be working quite nicely, YouTube in particular and Facebook occasionally, but YouTube's the one. So if you've got any questions or any comments that you want to put forward, and because I've got a question, I know Rose has got a question. My question is obviously natural dyes, with the cleaning process that one has to go through when eventually the clothes do require to be cleaned. How careful, how cautious do you have to be with the natural dyes that obviously they don't come out or spoil anything else that's in the wash?
Anything that you use that's natural, is you can't compare it with synthetic dyes. You know, synthetic dyes, you have loads of chemicals and it's always going to stick to the fiber. And I mean, it's synthetic, it's a chemical thing. But when you use natural dyes, it's nature's way. So every shirt, every garment we make that with a natural dye, it's always going to be a little bit different in shades. And of course, we try to perfect that. And being in Peru, we're very lucky to make these tests. But with natural dyes, there's a thing called morviente, which is basically the natural dye is like attached to the fiber. And to attach it to the fiber, you would use lemon. You have to use something acidic. So it could be lemon. It could be alumbre, which I believe is a type of metal, I believe. In some areas, they use even kids' urine for the morviente as well. But in our case, we use lemon. No, we don't do that. But it's so, for example, the shirt I'm wearing now, the base layer, this is made from cochinilla. And that we used cochinilla, lemon, and I believe some water. But you want, when you get the natural dye, you do want to wash it a little bit. And you want to make sure that the water starts running a bit clear. And then after that, it shouldn't leave any more dyes.
So the
wash warm water, light colors.
Am I right in thinking that I've got this picture here? Is that the source of some of the natural dyes?
Yeah. So that's the cactus, and then the cochinilla is it's an insect, and I think you have another picture of it. Yeah, there you go. So basically, you just press on it, and then you use the blood that comes from the insect. There's another picture you have of, I think, of a hand, and there's a kind of like a red smeared on it. That's the cochinilla in the powder. Yeah.
Okay.
Find out how easy it is to subscribe to all our free programs. Visit our website at theoutdoorstation.co.uk or look us up on Facebook.
Uh, I'll find that in a second. We have a couple of questions coming through, some comments. Let me just see. This was the one that Rose asked you earlier on before we started. Why alpacas and not use llamas for llama wool for production? But I think you've kind of answered that already.
I actually think Renzo might have answered this, would answer this a bit better.
Oh, okay. Renzo?
You know, the most luxurious fiber, animal fiber, is the vicuña. It's a very, very beautiful animal. So the previous civilizations domesticated the vicuña for their fiber, and that turned into the alpaca. The llamas were actually domesticated as more of a pack animal, not strong like a donkey, but they were carrying more items. So it wasn't really so much for their fiber, so their fiber isn't as prized as the alpacas. But people do make clothes out of them too, but it's just not at the same level because they weren't domesticated for that reason. So, but they do have advantages, and they do grow more in Bolivia and Argentina. So either way, it's Peru has more alpacas, has a mix of both. But and then alpacas live in higher elevations as well. So the environment they're in is more extreme. So that's another reason why their wool is more resilient.
Okay. Well, we've got a few more questions coming through, so we'll start going through some of them now. It's from Chris. Thank you, Chris, for taking the time to put this in. Is alpaca, I can't say it tonight, alpaca wool like merino, as in not itchy on the skin?
Correct, right. So the factors that contribute to itchiness, one of them is the micron size. So early in the history of wool, people were making thick wool, products made from thick wool, and that's what made it feel quite itchy. There are other factors, of course. So merino wool is a very thin micron one, as well as the alpaca we use, the royal alpaca. So that makes it also not itchy. And then there's the other factor that alpaca has, is which it has smoother scales. So the hairs on the fiber, the fibers have scales on them, and the alpaca ones are very smooth relative to the merino ones. So yes, it is less itchy than merino.
While I think about it, if one of you could answer, the other question I'd have is, when you do wash it, do you have to be careful of about shrinkage and that type of thing? But do carry on, Melly, whatever it is you were going to say.
Oh, sorry. No, just to add on a little bit. So we use royal alpaca wool, so that's about 18.5 microns or so around there. Most of the alpaca wool that you would find in the market now is a bigger micron, so usually around 19 to 20 microns. And then like the rugs and outer blankets around 20 or 21 microns above. So the one we use is around 18.5, and that's about 1% of the exported alpaca wool. So it is, the alpaca wool we use is quite rare. Not many people use it. So it could be that maybe alpaca wool has this idea of being itchy, because what you would find most is the 19 to 20 micron alpaca wool. Well, we use a bit finer, so it also depends on your skin as well, how sensitive you are. I've had friends who found merino wool itchy, but not alpaca, and I've had it reverse. So it definitely depending also on the user.
Okay, and then just to continue that a bit further, how would somebody know what thickness alpaca was used in the manufacture? Is it an obvious thing?
Yeah, because if you're using a finer one, you're going to say it always. So the popular one is baby. And if you're working with baby, you're going to promote, this is baby alpaca. It's not wool that comes from babies, baby alpacas. It's just, that's the name of the grade that Melly mentioned. So they're going to definitely say, this is baby alpaca. They're going to say, this is 100% baby alpaca. And just like we do, we say this is 100% royal alpaca, the 18.5 microns, whereas baby is 19 to 20 microns. And then anything above and beyond that, superfine, guariso, these other ones, I mean, greso as well, they're just not going to talk about it. So if where you're buying, when people come to Machu Picchu and they buy these alpaca sweaters, they're not 100% alpaca and they're not baby or royal alpaca. Because if they were, they would be promoting it, because that's where the price comes in. And so like in our clothes, the reason we promote it is the price of the clothes comes from the value of the fibers. It's not, we're not putting so much into marketing. We're not putting so much into advertising because we're trying to create innovative products that people are inspired to learn more about on themselves because the product is good. So because of that's the value of the product is really mostly from that quality of the material used. And when you have quality material, you're going to promote that. So for us and for the people who use baby alpaca, which is a really good grade of alpaca, you would definitely be promoting that.
Oh, excellent. That's really good. Thanks for clarifying that, because I had no idea there were that many different grades. And obviously now people know what to look for, which is the most important thing. Another question we've had come through. We can see that there's a range of base layers in the pictures. Obviously there's base layers and mid layers, I think. Do you have any more ideas for future products, or are you expanding the range more?
Yes. Yeah, Nelly, you go ahead.
Definitely. Oh, yeah, definitely. Not many people know that alpaca wool is actually great for summer and spring. So we're coming out with a new collection for mostly for summer. So we'll have shorts. Possibly lighter long sleeve shirts. We're going to have lighter base layers as well. I think also we'll be coming out with more undergarments, more underwear. Type of things. Yeah.
Okay. I've got a question here for you, Renzo, from Charles Ross, who's a regular viewer. Thanks for watching again, Charles. Have you looked at the incoming responsible alpaca standard from the textile exchange? If so, what do you think of it? When RWS landed it, took a couple of goes to get it better. I'm not too sure what that means. Are you aware of what Charles is referring to?
I'm not aware of what he's referring to, but I can just talk about a little more about the context of alpaca and responsibility. I can try to depict it a bit more. So if I were to compare it to merino wool, both fibers will have a history of use. And in merino's case, the merino sheep comes from Spain, and then it was brought into Australia and New Zealand, where it's the sheep are grown. In the case of alpaca, alpacas come from Peru. So the history of use there is from these small local communities, actually. And it's been like that for a while. So they're really part of the culture. And that's important to note, because the way they view these animals isn't as a commodity. And that's the key difference, is that they're not viewed as a commodity. So each individual family views alpacas in a different way, more as a part of the culture. And it really is viewed like that. So the norm for alpacas is to care for the animals, and because they're a part of your life and your history and your culture.
Okay, thank you. Another question's come through from Martha in Canada again. Thanks again, Martha. What is the relationship between the warmth rating of the fabric or garment and the microns of the fiber used? So going back to your previous comment about the royal alpaca.
Right, so definitely without a doubt, if you're using thicker fiber, it's gonna be warmer. But this is one of the tricky things with textiles, is even if you use a thinner fiber, but your yarns are thin and it's a closed knit, a very small knit, as our clothes are, for example, the knit here, it's a very small yarn. So even if it's not like these bigger alpaca sweaters that are used more in fashion, this is more of this is an outdoor apparel. So it's a small yarn and a very, very small knits. So that would offset the thinness of the microns, is because you're using the smaller, you're getting more coverage as well. So on its own, the fibers of the thicker hairs would keep you warmer. But in the context of the clothes, where you have yarn size and then the type of cloth you're making, that doesn't apply anymore, because it's more about the cloth. So how much does your cloth weigh per meter squared? And some people want it lighter, some people want it heavier. The heavier ones are going to be warmer. In terms of things would be in terms of each individual fiber's heat resistance. And or being able to thermal properties. And alpaca has these advantages because of where it comes from in these high elevations and cold temperatures.
Okay. Now, Charles has come back with for more information what he was referring to. It may be that you don't have the same sort of commercial association over there. RWS is the responsible wool standard. We're now on version 2.1 in the UK and Europe, I presume he means. The Textile Exchange is the body that controls the responsible down standard, which has in the last decade become the default standard. Are you aware of any of these things in Peru?
No, I'm not. Melly, did you have something to say about that? Because I can add something.
No. Just that I have heard of RWS, and I actually believe there is another certificate out there, but I don't think they have that in Peru. I've only heard it in the States, I believe.
Okay. Well, we're not trying to catch you out. Obviously, there's different relationships in different places with different associations. There's another question that has come through, which again, I think is probably you, Renzo. From Chris again, would I be right in thinking that the tighter the weave, the more windproof it would be? And the other thing to add to this, I'd just like to ask you is, what is the typical weight of something like a medium base layer, just for people to compare it with whatever they've got?
Sorry, the weight of a base layer?
Yeah, the weight of a base layer. I'll look this up on the website while you're answering that question from Chris.
Men's medium.
A men's medium is about 360 grams, I would say, around 380 grams. So, the tighter the weave, if it's more windproof, I would say yes.
Yes, of course. Like the windbreakers would. So windbreakers themselves are actually weaves. They're not knits. So definitely, 100%. So if you wanted a windbreaker or a water repellent layer, like a 100% water repellent, those would be weaves as well. They wouldn't be knits.
Okay, excellent. Well, the questions are coming through thick and fast, which is quite nice. So do keep them coming, folks. It all keeps them on their toes.
Yes,
you know, they've got to know,
please.
They've got to earn their pen.
Let's go. I want to look up RWS. I'm curious what RWS. We have to have a second interview and I will explain everything.
Come back with all technical questions. Right. Okay, well, while you're thinking about that for a second, what I do want to do is just mention what's coming next week. Next week, we are speaking with Andrew Denton, who is the CEO of the UK Outdoor Industries Association, which is the political arm of the outdoor industries generally. That would be everybody from brands, manufacturers, through to press and other associated activities. And they have a lot, or they work a lot with the government in trying to put influence into them to get various outdoor positive programs and such completed and brought to the nation, so the general health of the nation, etc. And as you can see from the title there, their job is really to represent and promote the outdoor recreation industries, and that is everything to do with the outdoors, not just a recreation activity, that is our access to the outdoors as well. It's a multifaceted kind of job and role, as you'll hear, and it's, as you can hear from my explanation, it's quite complicated to explain. It's all about lobbying government and trying to put forward the health benefits of being outdoors, as we've obviously learned to appreciate over recent weeks and months, and or 12 months now, haven't we? Just the mental benefit as well as the health and fitness benefit, and in fact various things Andrew, I'm sure, will come touch on, have actually been mentioned in Parliament, and I believe our Boris has in fact announced and read from some of the documentation. So it's the bigger picture. So if you're interested in the bigger picture of what's going on in the outdoor industries and how that could affect you and I on the ground, as it were, it'll be a interview conversation well worth tuning into. And certainly it's at another level. So if you're interested in that type of thing, then do check us out next Wednesday, same time, 7 o'clock. But we'll come back to our guest tonight. Thank you very much indeed for taking the time, Melly and Renzo. I'll just have a look, see if there's any more questions coming through. Nothing immediately. One person did say, where I did see it down here, I blame the wool thing. This is from Chris Williams again. I blame the wool thing on my mum, as she made me wear Aran jumpers as a kid. And then Rose dived in with, she had a woolen nightdress or something. Is that what you had? A woolen jumper, was that? I thought that was sleeping in some wool. That would be a pretty itchy. Oh, yeah, that's right. You had one of those sexy woolen swimming costumes.
My gran knitted me my first swimming costume. I can remember my gran knitted me a swimming costume, so which was great until you got in the water, and then you know what happened as soon as you get it wet. It just came down by my knees. It was. I can remember even then being mortified. I must have only been about 5.
There's an opportunity for you guys.
Right. That's the plan.
Now, you mentioned your other products. Did you say you're coming into a range for babies? Was that a completely different brand than you're going to work to on that baby range clothing?
Definitely. We're going to get into every... So apart from the outdoors, we're going to have a different brand that's going to focus on creating just all sustainable clothes. So it could be baby clothes, anything. Because of the unique positioning in Peru, we really want to push the sustainability as much as we can, and sustainability in dyeing, sustainability in the whole manufacturing process, and also ethics and transparency. And this is something we're learning about more and more about the details. We're improving our methods, but also we're hoping to create a platform through social media to teach people, you know, what to look for. What are the correct questions to ask about sustainability? Is the shirt biodegradable? Were any chemicals used in the manufacturing? Are the logistics low in carbon usage? So there's so much information out there about sustainability. We want to create a lot of products from Pima cotton, alpaca, from everything possible, and explain to people what makes it sustainable, what they should be asking other brands for. So we want to be very involved in the conversation about sustainability, because we think there's a lot we can change in the industry.
No, just to add on to what Renzo is saying, we do want to be a source of good information for people that are looking into sustainable products. Because we're a brand and they manufacture, we can understand what to look for in a product. There are certain things that I had no idea about asking about, like the stitching of the garment piece together. I never would think to ask somebody, to ask a brand, is it made from a biodegradable material? Is it made, where is this from? And then I guess the ultimate question that we still are figuring the answer to is exactly what is sustainability? Because you can say a product is sustainable, but where does it come from? Does it come from, let's say, Australia? Does it then go travel to Asia? Does it go and then distribution centers? And then you have the packaging, all the plastics that's involved, all the chemicals in production, and then the end life as well. That's super important. How you dispose of the item once you're done using it. I had one customer who asked me, like, exactly what do I do? And then I told him, you know what, just dig it up in the ground and let it biodegrade. But you can't do that if all of like the threads and labels are not made from natural substances like cotton or wool. So we were trying to be a source of information for people to really get transparent information, know what to ask about sustainable product. It doesn't have to be about alpaca wool. It can be even cotton, exactly how is recycled polyester sustainable. And we hope to have all of this information launched within this month. And if anybody has any topics they want to talk about and want to learn, we can always share information on that too.
Cool. Well, let's just talk about the process, mm-hmm. because obviously you've gone into depth there about your ambition. But as I understand it, your product, you're now standing by your product as being 100% biodegradable. Does that imply that the life of the product isn't very long, or as long as...
We have two lines. Should we say? Yeah, right. So we have one line that's 100% biodegradable and one line that isn't 100% biodegradable. But we're slowly making the transfer over. So not everything can be 100% biodegradable right now. For example, the base layers... the zipper, there is no manufacturer that makes 100% biodegradable zippers. Right. And this is, a zipper is very, very technical. The biggest company that we should all push is YKK. They're a great manufacturer of zippers. So and they've been making more and more sustainable zippers, but I think we can push them to make 100% biodegradable zippers, and that's very important. Now, the life of the product, in it being 100% biodegradable, we're not referring to compostable. So compostable is what you'd want your plastic bag to be. You'd want it to quickly dissolve into the ground. 100% biodegradable, the way we're making our clothes, is that it will not contaminate. Now, in an environment where it's moist, in soil with microbes in it, and you leave it in that environment, it will degrade and not contaminate in regards to our natural colors line. And in your closet or with normal usage, that will not happen. It will have a normal lifespan as any alpaca, any merino, any cotton clothes.
Fantastic. Okay. Now, the information obviously is available on your website, I trust. So if people want any more information, weights, details, etc., depending whether they're in the Europe or UK area or obviously in the US. We've had another question come through, which is quite interesting. Again, I wonder if this will be one for you, Melly, from Michael Smith. Thanks for writing in, Michael. Will you develop long underwear with a fly, boxer briefs with a fly? Mike from Washington, D.C.
Yes, we will. Definitely. Sorry, we just have one type of boxers, and that's without the fly. And then we have also one type of, pants, they would call in the UK, but for Americans, we'd call it underwear. Or panties for ladies. So we're going to make different types for each one. We also plan to make a fly for the leggings as well. So we're going to have a different sorts of innovative products and definitely a bigger collection and definitely more colors as well.
So it would be true then, obviously, with your development plans that you've obviously had the impact that it implies you've had, that the people love the products, there's a growing demand for them, and you're enthusiastically approaching your expansion ideas with new ranges and more products. So, you know, you're obviously getting good response from customers.
Yes. I'm very surprised. I've gotten random messages from people that say, we love what you're doing, keep going, keep pushing the sustainability. I'm just very surprised about all the support that we've gotten from our customers who come back. And if there's an error or something, they're very kind to tell us what the error is. And I bring it to Renzo and then we get it fixed. So in a way, I kind of feel like we're all doing it together with our customers, because their feedback really, it takes us, it's really good for our production. And that just goes back to us being the manufacturer. Without the feedback of the customers, we wouldn't be able to improve on our product. If we were just a brand, we would have to talk to the manufacturer and it would have to be a long discussion in this forest. But in our case, it's just me yelling at Renzo, like, hurry up, make it better, man. This is terrible. You got to do better. And then fighting, and then I'm right.
Yeah. Well, that's, you have a discussion and he has to agree with you. With the advantage with a small company, of course, you can be light on your feet and turn things around.
Yes.
Perhaps this is a question for you then, Melly, from Martha in Canada. Any plans to do a hoodie with no zipper? Because I think there's a zipper on the hoodies that I've seen the pictures of.
Yeah, this is actually one of the products I've been bugging Renzo about as well. I've been saying, I was like, we need to make one without a zipper, and we need to also make the base layer, so be essentially the hoodie without the zipper, also without a zipper as well, because I know personally me, I like when it's no zipper. We also plan to have pockets, of course. I've been testing our gear in the Netherlands for about a month now. I'm not sure if you heard, but last week it was snowing here. The canals were frozen. And I've been running. It's been, I think, about close to -5 Celsius in the Netherlands. And I would wear my leggings, my 110 shirt, long sleeve. And then I wore this. I actually run in as well. And then I wear a mid layer over it. And then I just run with mittens and I'm pretty good. It's actually pretty warm. Sometimes I have to take off my mid layer and I'm in good condition. But so I need to say, I'm actually trying to see how far I can go without washing my clothes of just the alpaca wool, because I want to test I want to start kind of a campaign. How long can you go without washing your alpaca wool shirt? So hopefully I get to a month. So far I've been about 3 weeks. So, and it's been smelling good.
Great. Well, we're sort of coming up to our hour now. I'd just like to remind people, if they would like to follow us, we're, in fact, I shall start that video again. For some reason, it has started halfway through. So let me just come back to my buttons, because we have in that video all the contact details for the company, which goes something like this. Right, let's start that again. So you can follow Arms of Andes on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and of course on their website, .com for America. You can follow us, if you're not doing so already, on the same places, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and of course on our website as well. And this, or the audio from this interview, will be going out as a podcast and joining the 537 other ones, which are available over on our podcast library. And of course, I just want to say thank you to everybody that watches the show live, to the podcast listeners, to the guests, and everybody that's part of the news stream, newsletters and the live stream, and also those that have made a little financial donation as well on Ko-fi and Patreon, which is greatly appreciated. So I think there is one final question, which is always a belter, and I haven't asked it for a while, so it'll be quite interesting to actually do it on video for the first time to see the expression on your faces. Of all the questions I could have asked you about your company and the products and alpaca wool, I can't say it tonight, alpaca wool, what should I have asked you?
I'm just going to drop in here, as after the show ended, two questions were in the chat which I could have asked at this very moment. The first was to clarify the location on a fleece of the royal and baby wool that Renzo mentioned. These are to be found on the chest and centre of the back, respectively. The finer wool is found, separated, and then sorted by touch. The second question relates to where the alpaca fleeces are sourced from. Apparently, they're bought from all over the Highlands via a cooperative.
Ah. Wait, what is, how is the life of the alpacas? I guess maybe the life of the alpaca. That's actually quite an interesting story. Every time I see people go to Peru, and they're just astonished about how the alpacas live so free in the Andes, and how we treat our alpacas like it's part of our family in a way. These alpacas live like the best lives, I can say. Me and my brother try to find them to take some photos one day, and we couldn't find any because they were brought up to higher altitudes, and the only way to reach there was by hiking, and it would take like 2 hours to get there because they just live such a nice life. And it's interesting because the reason the alpaca fiber is actually so great is goes back to the climates, to where they live. You know, in one day in Cusco, you have it super cold, it's frozen, and then the sun comes up, and then it's super hot, and then it's windy, and then it rains, and the alpaca has to survive all of that. So of course the fibers have to protect themselves, but then also the life of the alpaca. There's a happy alpaca, there's great fiber as well. So I think that might have been one good interesting question. How do Peruvian alpacas live? And then I don't know if there's another
one. What about you, Renzo? Have you thought of one that I should have asked you?
You asked some great questions. The audience asked some great questions, some questions I never answered before.
Have a moment. I'll just give you a couple of more comments that have come through from Chris Williams. He was suggesting wooden toggles rather than plastic zips for closure. Martha from Canada, great to know more about the process. Thank you all. And Chris, once again, really enjoyed this evening. Thanks to yourselves and obviously Arms of Andes. So some good comments there. So any thoughts, Renzo, before I run the last video?
No, just a little bit about, so we're creating, you know, the outdoor apparel, and I guess our goal is a good question. It's a good topic to talk about. What is our goal as a company? It really is, we're making outdoor apparel that will not damage the outdoors. So it's bringing you closer to nature, closer with nature, so you're not harming it too. And I think it's nice to think about your outdoor apparel like that, that you're wearing something that's protecting you from the environment, and it's also protecting the environment.
Fabulous. That's a lovely ending, certainly. Okay, folks, well, thanks you very much, both of you, for joining us tonight. It's been a fascinating insight to your company, and, you know, all due credit to you. You're a young company in the outdoor world, as it were, with a couple of years behind you now, but obviously things are going really well, and timing wise, you know, you've really got the sustainability and the whole environmental thing as a priority, which is obviously everybody is much more aware of in the last 12 months, I think. So congratulations to you. Wish you all the best. So on that
thank
note,
you so
folks,
much.
You're welcome.
Yes, likewise. Thank you.
So on that note, folks, thanks very much indeed for joining us on the show. I hope you enjoyed it. It's been a little bit of informative, a little bit of education, a little bit of history, and a little bit of technical stuff as well. So I'm sure there's been a lot there to pick apart. And you can always obviously play the video back again at a later stage to see if you missed anything or pick up further information. But of course, all the information can be found over on their website, armsofandes.eu or .com. So on that note, I'm going to say farewell. Thank you very much indeed once again for joining us. Hopefully come along next week. It's going to be quite interesting and very, very different. Certainly finding out more about what goes on in the politics of the outdoors world. And then after that, we are speaking to Chris Townsend, who had to delay his interview for different reasons, mainly a lot of snow, I think, from where he was. So we're looking forward to speaking to Chris the following week. So until next time, folks, take care out there and bye for now.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this podcast. My thanks go out to, of course, Melly and Renzo. And should you be tempted to try anything from their fabulous range in the UK, Europe, or the United States, please use the discount code OUTDOORSSTATION, one word, lowercase, OUTDOORSSTATION, before March the 17th, 2021, to receive a 5% discount. Well, that's about all from me today. Until next time, folks, as always, bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To hear or see more from our extensive free library, please visit theoutdoorsstation.co.uk.